Welcome to another episode of the Blue Crew, a very hungover episode. We are a Rangers podcast on the Bleed Podcast Network. I'm your host, Johnny Lazarus, joined by my co-host, Cody Frankel. We've got an awesome interview today with Noah Rubin, the former professional tennis player, current professional pickleball player, and he does a lot of media stuff with Behind the Racket, his show in regards to the tennis world. He's a huge Islanders fan, so we had a fun little, you know, back and forth shit talk kind of conversation with him. This intro is going to be a little different. Cody and I are going to talk about the week, but then Cody's going to the game against the Predators. So I will then record the fan questions by myself. So I'll answer fan questions in a bit here. But before I continue to ramble on, Cody, what's going on? You're in your jersey. You're ready to go. Train's leaving in 10.
I'm ready to go. I'm ready to see Halak do his thing. You know, I'm pumped. I paid almost $200 to see my boy Halak. I'm thrilled, honestly. The only thing that could have made me happier is if Hayek was still on the team. And then, you know,
you had to expect Halak to play in this game.
Yeah, fuck a Lant. But anyways, no, I mean, I don't know. But whatever, it is what it is. I'm just fucking stoked to see my boys, Kane and Tarasenko, baby.
You haven't seen Kane play yet, right?
No. I haven't been to a game since the Panthers game, like, in January.
Oh, wow. The Garden was buzzing last night. Not that I really watched a lot of it, but, yeah, it looked insane. I mean, the Rangers absolutely routed the Penguins. Let's talk about this whole week. Three straight wins at home against the Caps and two against the Penguins. We got to ramp our energy up a little bit right now,
though. And one OTL loss against the Penguins. So,
well, we talked about that game on last week's episode.
Yeah, I'm just saying we got fucking 7 points against the Penguins. No, I can't count. 5 points against the Penguins. Yeah, man, I think they played a fantastic game against the Caps. I think
That Big City Greens thing?
What'd you say?
What'd you think of the animation?
Dude, I thought that was like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, it was so cool. When they showed like Kane's snipe, I was like, oh, shit. I can't remember if I watched this. I watched the first game against the Penguins when we lost. I watched the Caps game. I don't think I watched the Penguins game. What was the score of that one?
I think 4-2.
4-2? Yeah, I didn't watch. That's the one game I didn't watch. But I'm proud of myself. I actually watched every other game this week. Yeah, last night's game was electric, 6-0. Igor finally had a shutout. He finally did it. That might be his first one of the year. Like, it might actually be his first one of the year. I think it is.
That's his second. That's his second shutout of the year. I don't remember what his other one was. I don't know.
Second shutout of the year? Was it against the Sharks?
I have no idea. Let's just continue because I'm not going to think of it.
Okay. You know, I think our top six is doing a great job at producing points now. You know, it's what we needed. And the Rangers at this point in time, you know, they're a scary team. And we talked about it last week, you know, which is crazy, right? What four games can do. But we said, like, I think this is the week we turn around. And funny enough, I'm pretty sure I said 3-1 on the week, and right now we're 3-0. So hopefully we go 4-0 and prove me wrong. Because if I spent that money tonight and lose to the Preds, I'll be pretty pissed. But you know, I think they're getting it together. They're getting it together, and they're going to be a scary team.
Yeah, and I think the biggest change right now is just splitting up Panarin and Kane. And obviously that wasn't something that most people wanted, because the whole reason of bringing Patrick Kane in, we thought, was to play with Artemi Panarin because of their chemistry in Chicago. But it's showing right now, like, that first line of Panarin, Mika, and Tarasenko, like, that line is fucking elite. I mean, you look at their last five games: Panarin, 3 goals, 2 assists; Mika, 4 goals, 4 assists; and Vladimir Tarasenko, 1 goal, 3 assists. And, you know, the difference too is, you know, last night in that Penguins game, they have a 3-on-1, Mika, Panarin, and Tarasenko. And instead of making the extra pass or the beautiful backdoor tap in, Tarasenko just lets one rip. You know, it's great to have Panarin finally with a winger that's a shoot-first sniper kind of player.
Dude, the one-timer was showing. Sick.
Yeah, it was sick.
It was sick.
But
we needed it. We needed it, right? Like, it's such a nice sight to see not making that extra pass and just ripping it. And his goal, I mean, the window that he scored in was like 2 inches. He just sizzled it in, and it was fucking beautiful.
And then you look at that second line of Kreider, Trocheck, and Kane. Like, Patrick Kane and Kreider have looked pretty good together. And I think Kreider being on a line with Kane just adds more speed to what that balance was prior, you know, with Trocheck, Kane, and Panarin. Because Kane and Panarin aren't necessarily the fastest wingers out there. So having Kreider on that line really makes them a little more scary. And, you know, you see Patrick Kane had that assist to Kreider last night as well. And, you know, Kreider scoring goals. He's got 4 in his last 5. We need him to get hot again. Trocheck hasn't been scoring, but he's got 6 assists in his last 5 games. And then Patty Kane, man, what can you say? Like, he's been pretty damn good.
As advertised. I don't think you can say he hasn't been as advertised because he's pretty much a point-per-game player. And yeah. I mean, he is a point-per-game player. Not pretty much. He is a point-per-game player. And, you know, everybody was like, oh, he's over the hill, over the hill. No, he's not. And he's producing every single game and making a difference. You know, his first 2 games as a Ranger, he had a pretty rough start. And I think in his last 6 games, because I think he has 8 games as a Ranger, maybe it's 9, but you know, in his last 6 games, I think he has 8 points. So
three goals, 4 assists in his last 8 games.
Yeah. Okay.
So, prior to the national game tonight. So,
yeah. You know. I mean, you know, and tonight's going to be a 2-point game from him, and he's going to have a goal and assist, and then he'll be 9-9. So, yeah. I'm pretty pumped with what we got out of that, and I think it was worth it. And I just, you know, I think the boys are actually buzzing now. The one thing I wanted to ask you is, what are your thoughts on Lindgren? Right, we have 13 games left. Like, do you think, you know, if he's 80%, they should throw him in? Should they just say, like, we're winning right now, we're kind of like finding our niche, whatever, however the fuck you say it. I mean, like, what's your thoughts on that? Do you think we should sit him another string of games? Should we throw him in? Like, what do you think?
I think you get Lindgren as healthy as possible. Right now, the Rangers have 90 points. They're in third in the Metro. They're 5 points back at the Devils, 8 points back at the Canes. Probably not going to catch either of those teams. Like, we basically know what our destiny is. We're 10 points ahead of the Islanders, 12 mm-hmm. points ahead of the Penguins. Like, there is enough room there to sit him for like another 2 games if need be. You know, I don't think there is a need to rush him back in the lineup. Listen, I know the Rangers are definitely a better team when he's in the lineup, but right now I think it's more important to have everyone, especially the people that are as important as Ryan Lindgren, to be healthy come playoff time. Like, Lindgren's going to be a guy that's, you know, probably playing with a broken bone or something come playoffs. So I think right now it is, you know, the time for him to sit and really just get healthy. And I wouldn't even be against, like, excuse me, you know, there's 13 games left there. I wouldn't be against sitting Foxy for a game here and there. Like, just give the guys some extra rest. Like, you know, I do think there is a need to ramp up your game before playoffs, but I also think there is a time and place where you sit the players, you know, to make sure they are well rested and are ready to go once playoffs do come around, because once the playoffs start, there's no pause.
I agree with you, but I wouldn't go there yet. I would sit Foxy and those guys for game whatever once we clinch that third. Once we clinch that, you know, another 2-3 games, if we get wins, I think we're locked in there. Then if you want to give Foxy a day off to rejuvenate, do whatever he's got to do to get himself right, to all the power to you.
But I agree.
One thing I wanted to talk about is, since this top six has really been so powerful these last 8 or 9 games, I mean, you've really noticed the kid line kind of taking a back seat a little bit in the last 15 games or so. I mean, you know, a couple games before we got Kane, they were kind of tailing off a little bit. But they're doing their job, but they're just not producing. And it makes me wonder, like, can they get it right before playoffs? Because I think we're going to need them to produce more than they have been in playoffs if we want to make this deep run and we want to win a cup. I think it's going to take, you know, you can argue it's going to take every man. Like, the fourth line's doing their job right now. They're playing fantastic. I think the kid line, to me, is, you know, and they're not playing bad. They're not playing bad. They're just not producing. And I think they need to kind of get back into that groove of producing. I don't know if it's maybe like Hedo cooled off and now, you know, he's kind of the catalyst for that line or whatever it is. But I do think they're going to kind of need to get back to where they need to be. I do think they're going to need to get back to where they were, you know, to get where they need to be.
Yeah. And you said it, Hedo is the catalyst. And in the last 10 games, Hedo has 0 goals, 3 assists. Kapokako, 0 goals, 2 assists, and Lafreniere, 4 goals, 0 assists. Them combining for only 9 points in the last 10 games, it's not very good. You know, we've kind of said it too, but this team goes as Mika goes, and Mika's been hot, so the team's winning and the team's playing fine. But it also goes as the kid line goes, you know? So, like, I feel like there is a trade-off, right? When Mika's not doing well, it seems like the kid line is. And when the kid line's not doing well, Mika just seems to pick up the slack. So, you know, I don't know what it is about that. Like, I don't know why everyone can't just be consistent at the same time, but I don't know, man. It's hard to really say like anything about the kid line, because I look around the league at all these young guys, and like Tim Stützle is one of the guys too that like is in the same range as Lafreniere, Hedo, and Kako, but he has just taken a leap to the next level. Like, he is becoming such an elite player, and he is so fun to watch. He's got 30 plus goals this year. Like, there's no reason why those three can't, but they just don't seem to produce. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't really have the answer, and that's the frustrating part. Like, because they do play well and they create chances, but they just, for whatever reason, can't score at a consistent rate. Like, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And then, yeah, I mean, I guess honestly, we'll see, right? In the next 10 games, we'll see if they're able to kind of get out of the funk they're in and get back into the swing of things. But playoffs is right around the corner. So that being said, all right, let's do this. Who don't you want? 1 through 8, or I guess technically 1 through 7, not including us, obviously. Mm-hmm. Like, who don't you want from most to least in the East?
Just go down the list.
Yeah. Who, if we play them at any point before getting to the cup, are you going to be like, holy shit, we're in trouble?
Well,
like,
it's Boston for sure. Okay. There's no way around that. Anyone who doesn't say Boston.
Agreed. Who's number two for you?
Like a part of me wants to say Tampa just because of,
Tampa.
You know,
no, it's
recent
Tampa.
History.
It is Tampa. It's got to be Tampa. It's got to be, like, regardless of, you know, how well they're playing, how not good they're playing, like, it's Tampa. I agree. All right, number three.
I think after them, I think it's the Devils.
Devils, same. Dude, we're in lockstep.
Yeah.
Okay. Number four.
Oh, my God. I'm going to say the Islanders.
So, funny enough, I was thinking about the Islanders, but I think I'm going to say the Penguins. I don't, dude, every time we play them, they give us trouble, like, regardless of how much we just kick their ass and stuff like that. Like, I just don't need that headache.
Yeah. It's so true, though. Every time we do play the Penguins, there is, like, that, like, extra, like, anxiety, you know?
Yeah. All right. So, five, I'll say the Islanders. I don't know. I'm not going to say the Islanders five. I'm going to say the Hurricanes. I'm not discrediting them. They're a sick team. I'm going to go Hurricanes five.
I was going to go Hurricanes, Leafs, and then Penguins. Penguins, like, to me, are the least concern.
Wow. To me, until proven otherwise, it'll be the Leafs.
Yeah.
Regardless of how talented they are. I mean, it's just, you know, I'd probably go Islanders, then Leafs. And then the last thing, like, one thing I did want to talk to you about was Panthers are right there, and I mentioned this on our interview, but, like, they're 1 point behind the Penguins right now. Dude, they're a team who can give Boston trouble. They have the second most goals scored in the league behind Boston. And in playoffs, anything can happen in hockey. Dude, if Bobrovsky kind of gets his shit together and, like, you know, if Bob plays pretty well, dude, I don't know, man. I'm not saying they can beat them, but I don't know. I could see them giving them trouble. I think matchup wise, like, they're a pretty good matchup for them. Whereas I think if, you know, like, I think Boston might sweep the Penguins or the Islanders in, like, five.
Let me ask you this. How awesome would it be to watch Matthew Tkachuk and Brad Marchand go at it for a 7-game series?
Yeah, it'd be sick.
Yeah. Tkachuk would piss the fucking, he would piss off the Bruins so much. He'd become the most hated player in the NHL in that series, I think.
Yeah, I mean the Panthers are playing hot right now. They're 7-2-1 in their last 10. I think in their last 20, they're something like 14-5-1 or something really good like that. I mean, they've obviously kind of resurged a bit and they've distanced themselves a little bit from the other teams, right? Like, they're 2 games ahead of Washington now, they're 3 games ahead of Buffalo and Ottawa. So they're creeping up there, and, you know, Pittsburgh's playing a little shaky, right? They're 5-4-1.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh might drop off, man. I think they might not make it.
Honestly, I think they will. I think the Islanders are going to have a collapse.
You do?
Yeah, I do. I think
I don't know. I think Sorokin's been too good this year for them
possible.
To fall apart. I think it really is going to be Pittsburgh.
You might be right. I just am really hoping that Boston gets the right match for them. Who can, you know, if they can't beat them, at least take them to 7 or something like that. But the only other thing, have you been watching March Madness at all?
Yeah. I actually didn't make a bracket this year. But I've been following along. I've been watching a lot of the games, especially, like, on work days, because it's fun just, like, have that distraction.
Yeah, it's been crazy. I hedged my bet yesterday, so I bet on I did a 3-leg parlay on the UCLA game, and I won, and I was sweating because obviously Northwestern was coming back and making it super close, and I, like, with a minute and, like, 20 seconds left, I knew I was going to win. I was like,
there's nothing better, man.
It was so anxiety ridden, man.
Also, this week, I should say, is the NCAA hockey tournament. It kicks off, so. A lot of fun in that. BU just won Hockey East in overtime. That was a sick game. Colgate won the ECAC for the first time in a long time. There's going to be a lot of good college hockey on this week as well. Minnesota. I don't know if you saw that goal that Pitlick had, his brother. It was fucking gross.
Yeah, it was filthy.
Yeah, that was sick. But yeah, I think, I mean, that's it for the, like, for the intro, right? I'll do some fan questions here in a minute when you hop off to go to the game.
Yep.
But yeah, I'll just talk about the Predators game and I'll answer some fan questions and then we'll go into the interview with Noah Rubin.
Perfect.
What an unbelievable performance by the New York Rangers tonight against the Nashville Predators, winning by the score of 7-0. Top to bottom, it was an incredible game. They scored 6 in the first period. Filip Hedl starting it off. Keandre Miller, 2 goals, 2 assists. Mika Zibanejad, another goal, 4 straight games. Who am I missing? Panarin, another great power play goal. Hlock with a shutout. I mean, everyone just played incredible. And I don't want to talk too much about it because, you know, anyone who watched that game understood how dominant it was from front to back. I do want to go into the fan questions, and I'll be doing this alone without Cody because he was at the game. But let's start off with Adam Monty, 27. Are we the greatest team ever assembled? And listen, the last two games, this team has looked incredible, outscoring their opponents 13-0. You know, back-to-back shutouts. This team has so much skill, and tonight I think was the perfect example of it. Obviously, that was a weaker Nashville opponent. They didn't really have their full healthy lineup put together. They had a lot of AHL players playing for the first time at Madison Square Garden. You know, not exactly the best roster to play against, but to the Rangers' credit, you know, they usually play down to their opponent. And I thought tonight they really stuck it to them. And I, you know, to be honest, I think last episode I said, you know, this is the perfect opportunity for a Rangers letdown where Nashville can come in and surprise them and just outwork them and, you know, kind of grind them after two pretty tough games against the Penguins, two pretty emotional games. And sometimes it's hard to typically ramp up the energy after two pretty big games like that. But, you know, to the Rangers' credit, they came out and they played hard right from the front. So great performance, great 60-minute effort. And, you know, great for Hlock to get the shutout. Great for Keandre Miller to have the game that he had. And great for Filip Hedl to get back on the score sheet. Next, we're going to go to the Feeniest. And this is thoughts on who should win the Stephen McDonald Extra Effort Award. This is a tough one. You know, I feel like this year, from everything we've seen, I'd have to lean Jacob Trouba. That's my initial thought. You know, I think you can make the case, obviously, for Zibanejad and Fox, like always. You know, Igor, I don't think, has been as consistent. But what changed the entire season was Trouba's game against the Blackhawks, where he threw the helmet, got in 2 fights, laid those hits. You know, Trouba in his first year as the captain, I feel like, where there were a lot of question marks in the beginning of the season, whether he was the right choice by the fans, because, you know, we're not in the room and we don't understand what exactly goes on amongst the players, but everyone kind of thought it was going to be Kreider. And then, you know, obviously in the offseason, they announced it's Trouba. And I thought I think Trouba has done an incredible job at wearing the C, not only representing the Rangers, but representing the city as a whole and representing what the Rangers want to be. And that is a, you know, hard-nosed team, a skilled team, a team that's not afraid of anyone, and a team that has no quit. So I think, you know, Trouba has been the prime example of that this year. And, you know, if you ask me, I think he should be the lead candidate right now for the Stephen McDonald Award. Next one, Brandman7694. Do you think we get second place in the Metro? And that's a very good question because right now we're honestly within reach. The Rangers have 92 points, the Devils 97, and the Canes 98. We have back-to-back games this week against Carolina. That's, you know, 8-point swings possibly. If the Rangers win both, then we're just 2 points back of the Hurricanes. If they split, then it's the same as it is right now. And if the Rangers don't win both games and they lose both games, then obviously I think that is a pretty tough feat to accomplish. But the Devils also, you know, they're right there with us. They're playing pretty well as of late. They're 5-3-2 in their last 10. They're going to keep winning games. The Hurricanes are going to keep winning games as well. So it's not like it's in the Rangers' hands. It's not like they control their own destiny. You know, obviously if they play well, it'll help their case, but you know, they're going up against two pretty good teams right now that most likely won't go on losing skids. So I think it's possible. I wouldn't say it's likely. I probably wouldn't bet on it, but you know, the way this team's playing right now, who knows? They could even get first. So I'm hopeful they could do it, but at this point, you know, it's all about just finding the right form before playoffs. I don't even think seeding really matters right now, just with how the playoffs work. It's not that important. Let's go into the next one from Anthony Governale 19. And this is kind of a follow-up playoff hypothetical. Would you rather play the Canes or Devils first round? Devils easier to beat round two. And I said this a couple weeks ago, I think playing the Canes in round one would be better. You know, the Rangers seem to always up their game when they play against Carolina for whatever reason. And I think playing the Devils in the first round where the Rangers are the clear cut favorite, is just a disadvantage for them. Having the underdog chip on your shoulder kind of feeling, you know, playing against a team like Carolina would benefit them over, you know, having all the pressure in the world on them against a young team with nothing to lose at the Devils. Devils obviously have taken it to the Rangers this year and the past couple years. Well, not necessarily the last couple seasons, but you know, this year specifically, Jack Hughes and this new Devils team has really done a great job playing against the Rangers. And you know, I think that'd be a much more difficult round one matchup. Also with the fan bases too, when you add them to the equation, it's, you know, a little more ramped up and whatnot. But I think the Hurricanes would be a better matchup, better fit for the Rangers round one. And then you go into round two with all that momentum that you gained from round one, and you're playing against a Devils team that, you know, is just kind of lucky to be there, happy to be there. You know, the expectations aren't so high for this Devils team, but, you know, they want to make their mark in the playoffs. But then again, like, there's no pressure on them to win. So I think that would be the best recipe for the Rangers going forward. Let's go into the next one from Marky Ben. We're looking good, boys. Who do you think will be on the taxi squad for the playoffs? I actually don't necessarily know how taxi squads work fully. I would think Will Cooley is going to be on there. I think Zach Jones and Libor Hájek. You know, other guys that come to mind, maybe Othman gets called up when his season ends down in the OHL. I feel like he would be a taxi squad player. But then again, I don't know how that works necessarily either. Cody might have the answer for this if he was here. Definitely a good question to ask, but you know, I would think two defensemen, maybe two or three forwards. I don't think taxi squads are much bigger than that. But yeah, I would expect to see Cooley there. I'd expect to see Jones there, Hájek there, and I'd hope to see Othman. I don't really know who else you'd possibly bring up, but you know, those are the four that come to mind. Eric Weinberger, will the Rangers ever lose again? And the way they're playing right now, it does not seem like they ever will. I mean, man, what's it, five out of six games that they just won? You know, this team is showing right now. They're 7-2-1 their last 10. Like, when they're at their best, they're pretty fucking scary. You know, I think it was actually Grinnelli who tweeted it the other day. We posted on our Instagram story, Rangers, what was it? Rangers are a problem. I think that's what he said, and they are. This team, man, there's so much skill there. If they just, you know, outwork their opponent, no one should be able to beat them. You know, I made the joke a couple weeks ago, it's the Rangers versus the Rangers. They're the only team that could really beat them if they beat themselves. But, you know, I think the Penguins' performance on Saturday night was just the true ceiling for what this team has. They dominated a really strong Penguins team, a playoff team, and if they bring that effort every night, they shouldn't lose. Ben Star 33, is Igor back? And like I tweeted out the other day, Igor Shesterkin in his last three starts now is 3-0-0 with a 1.67 goals against average and a 0.948 save percentage. Those are the numbers that he was putting up last year. So yeah, I would say Igor's back right now. He's looked incredible in his last couple starts, you know, really coming into his own here at the right time. And that's the biggest thing, right? Like, you can question Igor early on in the season, but it's all about playing good at the right time, and I think that's what he's finding right now, and he's really ramping up his game, and you know, the numbers speak for themselves. So huge test against the Penguins. He performed immensely, and you know, it's great to see as we wind down the season here. Joe Marcus, 41. PP still doesn't look 100% at times. Curious to hear your thoughts on the best power play. And right now, the first unit is made up of Alexi Lafreniere, Vincent Trocheck, Artemi Panarin, Adam Fox, and Patrick Kane. And the second unit is Chris Kreider, Filip Hedl, Vladimir Tarasenko, Mika Zibanejad, and Jacob Trouba. If it were me, I would still like to have Fox and Zibanejad on the same unit. Panarin, too. I think the three of them move the puck so well, and you obviously want Fox setting up Mika for the one-timer as much as you can, because I think that's the biggest threat on the power play. I think it's fair to keep Trocheck and Kane on the first unit as long as you have Fox, Panarin, and Zibanejad together. I think the biggest thing is that both units have a shooting threat, and I think on that first unit right now, the shooting threat is, you know, Panarin or Kane, and those aren't necessarily shoot-first guys. They're more of playmakers. So, you know, Lafreniere, Trocheck, Foxy, like, they don't really have threatening shots either. So I'd like to see a Tarasenko or Zibanejad go on that first unit just to make them a little scarier. Tarasenko and Zibanejad are the two snipers on the team. I don't think there's any debating that. And, you know, I think if you have them in the mix on that first unit, then both units are just a little more well-balanced. And you know, I'd maybe swap out Lafreniere and put Zibanejad there, or I'd swap out Trocheck and put Tarasenko in that spot. You know, there's the problem is, it's a good problem to have. There's so many different combinations and so many different things you can do. And, you know, I think the power play looked pretty good tonight against Nashville. Panarin obviously scores that goal. But yeah, I'm not too concerned going forward. Like I said, it's a good problem to have with this much talent and this much skill. And now let's go into the last one. This is from Kaylee Schicitano. And I wish Cody was here for this one, but can we just LOL again at Johnny's prediction of the Pens winning the division? Also, in your opinion, if we stay healthy, what else do we need to do to win the cup? And yes, my prediction of the Penguins, and let's not forget, I'll be accountable. I think I predicted the Penguins to play the St. Louis Blues in the Stanley Cup final this year before the season started, and that is looking fucking horrible. So, yeah, I'm a little embarrassed on that pick. The Penguins might not even make the playoffs. St. Louis definitely won't make the playoffs. So, goes to show you my my preseason knowledge, but I will hang my hat on the fact that I said I think the Devils were a sleeper to make the playoffs. And I think Cody said the Ducks were going to be – oh, Cody's going to owe me $50, by the way. Cody said the Ducks was going to be – we're going to be better than the Devils this year, which they're not. And then what do we have to do to win the Cup? I think, you know, aside from staying healthy, I think it's really just finding that compete level at a consistent rate. You know, we saw it against the Penguins, against the Capitals this week, and they have to find that level and that much energy at a consistent rate. Consistency is the biggest thing. I think that's what Gerard Gallant has harped on a lot this year, is finding consistency. And, you know, I think that's what separates the good teams from the great teams in the NHL, is the word consistency. So if the Rangers can play hard, play fast, play skilled, not totally change their game, you know, they're a talented bunch, and, you know, they like to make the extra pass every now and then, and that's okay. But if they're doing that and not playing well defensively, that's when the issues happen. So as long as they're consistent in the D zone, they're breaking pucks out, they're keeping plays simple, you know, I think that's what this team needs to do to win the Cup, is just play the level they played on Saturday night at a consistent rate, and nobody can stop them. That's going to wrap it up for the fan questions. Thank you guys for sending them in, as always. Oh, I actually do have one more I got to shout out. And this is a DM from Goth Brooks RVA, who we exchange a lot of Twitter DMs. So shout out to you. And this is what he wrote me. Since December, when I sent you the picture and comparisons of Alexis Lafreniere and goon character Xavier Laflamme, Laffy has been awesome. His game reminds me of Trocheck, which got me thinking. Let's say his game develops and he, in fact, turns out a lot like Vinny. A scrappy gamer with a good shot, scores garbage goals too, similar career stats, etc. Would you guys consider it as a win or a disappointment, being he was a first rounder? Not only was he a first rounder, he was a number one overall pick. I don't think it'd be a disappointment. I mean, you look at a guy right now like Ryan Nugent Hopkins, who's another first round pick, or first overall pick, I'm sorry, for the Edmonton Oilers, who right now, you know, I think like 8 years into his career is finally having a career breakout season. So, you know, I don't think it's a disappointment as long as the team's winning. You know, I think it'd be considered a disappointment if, you know, he was playing similar to Trocheck and the Rangers weren't winning hockey games. You know, I think Lafreniere is a guy that you want to have on your team. He's a guy that battles when he's, you know, fully 100% locked in. You know, I think there's been times this season where he just didn't look very focused and his game has kind of slipped away. But, you know, the past 10, 20 games, I think he's been pretty locked in. His feet are moving. He's playing physical. He's, you know, really ramping up his physicality and, you know, rounding out the parts of his game. And, you know, I think that's all you can ask for, not only for a number one overall pick, but any player. You want them to be well-rounded. You want them to play gritty. You want them to score garbage goals. You don't want just a guy who scores highlight reel goals, because that's the guy who's not going to get it done in the playoffs. So, you know, I'd be happy, I think, if Lafreniere's career turned into that. But then again, it's all about if the team wins. If the team doesn't win, then yeah, it's a disappointment. But if they do, then who cares? That's what it's all about at the end of the day. So thank you for sending in that question. And right now, I'm going to send it over to our interview with Noah Rubin. This week on the Blue Crew, we are very happy to welcome on a friend of mine, a former professional tennis player, a current professional pickleball player. He does a lot of things in the sport of tennis and pickleball. He also hosts Behind the Racket, a jack of all trades, a very good looking jack of all trades at that. Welcome to the Blue Crew podcast, stupid Islanders fan, Noah Rubin. Noah, what's going on?
Super stupid.
Yeah, no, I appreciate. I'm not really sure what I'm getting myself into here, but I appreciate being on. I'm pumped. I mean, I love the banter back and forth, so I'm here for it.
Well, we're actually going to let you steer the interview. So, okay, do you want us to talk about pickleball first, or just shit on you and the Islanders for the first?
Actually, no. Before Johnny says anything so rudely, why don't you tell our fans a little bit about yourself and like what you've been up to lately?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, tough to hear former professional tennis player. Yeah. My whole life played tennis. I mean, that's kind of what I was known for. Junior on, I did about, my friends say, about 6 minutes at Wake Forest University before turning pro. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it was just kind of kicking my ass at the end of last year. So I took a break from it. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends owns a pickleball team, which is kind of the new thing to do. Right. And took a look into it, and it's actually pretty fun. So I'm doing that, having fun with it. And then obviously at the same time have Behind the Racket, which is kind of this mental health platform that I started, interviews players from tennis players, from one in the world to 1,000 in the world, and kind of getting their story behind the scenes of what's actually happening. And we are kind of working on a documentary right now that not a lot of people know about. So that's
breaking news.
Yeah. So that's happening now, and always 1,000 things in the tennis world. And obviously still, I mean, for this West Coast swing with the Isles, got to stay up until 1 a.m.
Well, I want to hone in on pickleball a little bit. Yes. What are your pickleball intentions? Like, you're trying to go 1v1 or
I'll play with you, Cody. I love pickleball.
You're so unathletic, though. I need a challenge.
I literally was a D1 athlete. What were you?
Johnny loves talking about the past, dude. I'm a D1 athlete now.
I will say, yeah, pickleball singles, like, there's nobody that I can even get within the realm of playing recreationally that's any good. Like, the doubles is fun. Like, I got a few friends from back home.
Very humble of you.
Max Eichler. No, I'm being dead serious. Like, they try to do this. They step on the court. They're like, oh, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever you say. The singles is off. Can we curse on this show?
Yeah, whatever you want, dude.
Yeah, okay. Rip it.
The singles is a fucking workout. It actually is. But it's like low key, like it's high intensity, just sprint back and forth. Yeah, and mostly 70-year-olds are playing it and getting hurt every other day.
But and they're good, though.
They're good. Legit. And that's the thing with tennis, like, there's a much bigger spectrum of
I was like, what the fuck was that thing?
There's like a tarantula.
That was a snake.
Would have been a much better story. Oh. But yeah, there's a much bigger spectrum of like bad tennis player to good tennis player, where like pickleball, there's not, it's a smaller court, there's less things to do. So like, you will play somebody that's 75 years old, and there's like, if they're okay, they're okay, you know? And I think a lot of people are struggling with that. But I mean, this thing is taking off like a wildfire. It's unbelievable. Recreationally, it's amazing. Professionally, has some, you know, places to go. Obviously, there's a lot of big sports guys that are buying teams, but we'll see what it turns out to be.
Well, the best thing about it is that you feel like you're getting such a good workout, but you're really not moving that much.
Doubles. I mean, doubles, you can go. I've gone hours in doubles without sweating. You know, like, you can do that for sure. And honestly, it's only working out like the worst part of your body, like bending over all the time. Mm-hmm. Your knees are destroyed on hardcore. I would say the singles, honestly, I would do that over a treadmill or anything else if I was just like kind of a person, not training for anything. Because it's fucking fun. It really
is. You get soaked.
You play with friends. Like, that's like, I could never really play tennis with any friends because it's so tough. If you don't play tennis, you can't really hit the ball around. With pickleball, you know, it takes what, 15 minutes if you picked up a paddle for the first time. And I don't really care what sport you play, you can kind of get into it. So it's been fun playing with friends and stuff like that.
So I'm decent at tennis, actually. Okay. In high school, I was rehabbing from an injury. Thank you. I was rehabbing from an injury, so my coach suggested I join the tennis team.
Okay.
And I joined it for a season. It was good time. Doubles.
At the time, was that the first time you picked up a racket, though?
No. I played growing up with like my mom all the time. She was pretty good.
I was like, I thought you just like woke up one day. I was like, I'll pick up a tennis racket.
Yeah, no. We were good. We were legit. I think we missed states by like a game, something like that. Like, we were pretty good.
Solid. I will say, a lot, whatever reason, a lot of hockey players, fans play a lot. They either are a tremendous fan of tennis, or they played, and I mean, we could talk about this later on, but they're, you know, speaking to a few of the guys, like, they absolutely love
talk about it now. What do you mean talk about it later?
Johnny's rolling his eyes because
no,
he can't serve. He can't serve.
All my European teammates that I had in college, like, for whatever reason, the Swedish kids, the Finnish kids, they play tennis like every day in the offseason.
It's insane. Yeah, no, talking to a few of the guys, like, I mean, you'll see it. I mean,
you can name drop. Don't be so
I don't know about the Rangers as much, but Islanders, Nelson, Brock Nelson plays all the time. He loves it. Actually, this is a weird name drop. Dennis Seidenberg.
Okay.
He actually played professional tennis. Nobody knows this.
I didn't know that.
He played low-level professional tennis when he was super young. He was actually talented, and then obviously went on to play on six different teams, and, you know, is working the Islanders now. But, you know, you see Barzell at the, you know, and Wahlstrom's playing, you know, constantly. So I don't know what it is. I think it's that European effect, but there's really no other sport that has as much of a tie. Sasha Barkov loves tennis. You know, I spoke to him a little bit about it, and they're just like, growing up, they played it. I mean, they have that, you know, European feel to it. So
I have a little idea for you. You do like a little hockey crossover behind the racket, make it like behind the cage or something, you know? Like,
well, I did a story with Barkov. Like, he was one of the first ones that I did to try to bring over. But I'm such a shitty skater. Like, that's like, that is step one for me. And I like never really had time. I got, you know, I went ice a little bit. One of my friends, Max Eichler, he still plays. Like, I wanted to do roller. So I bought some skates, but like, I'm terrified of rollerblading. Like, that's just so scary to me. Like, doing it on the street, terrifying. So, oh my God. Like, yeah, I mean, one bump and I'm going 10 feet into gravel. I don't need that in my life. But trying to get into ice a little bit. And then from there, I would love to do some kind of like video crossover with the tennis and hockey guys and see what we can do.
Have you seen that video of the, there was like a 2-on-2, I think it was like 6 months ago, 2-on-2, like tennis, like on ice. Did you see that?
Those guys went viral.
That was sick.
They were actually solid. Like, have played tennis before. Like, they weren't just fucking around, obviously, sick ice skating. But I'm very curious to see how, I mean, Nelson, I know, plays a lot, but some of these other guys, would love to see how they actually are on tennis court.
Well, I actually want to transition off of that because, you know, you're someone we've been in so many, I feel like, Twitter threads where like you're defending tennis and I'm defending hockey.
Yeah.
But then we also have that crossover where, like, you know, I am a very big tennis fan and I love watching. Like, I'm watching Indian Wells this week. Yes. I corrected myself. Thank God. Mm. You know, I feel like hockey and tennis, in my opinion, are the two hardest sports, and they're obviously very different, but they're also somewhat similar. You know, I watched a guy like Carlos Alcaraz play in the U.S. Open against Yannick Sinner for that crazy match. And I was thinking the entire time, wow, like, Alcaraz to me is like what Cale Makar is in the NHL. I feel like this young, explosive, up and coming player. Do you see any similarities with players in both sports? And can you just describe the difference in how hard it is? Because you're talking about ice skating and you don't know how, and you're a professional athlete.
Yeah, no, it's I think that's why I fell in love with hockey. I mean, I was growing up to Islanders games, even Rangers games from such an early age. And for me, it kind of came down to, like, this is something very few people can do. And I think that for me, I don't know, not that I'm dunking on a hoop anytime soon or anything, but like, you pick up basketball and I'm pretty good at basketball. I could throw a football, you know, decently, but hockey was just something so far away from making any sense. I mean, turning on a dime, skating backwards. I mean, has anybody felt a real puck before? The fact that you're putting this on a dime, you know, across three lines on the guy's stick. And I don't know, and knowing wherever, it's just amazing. So for me, that's why I fell in love with the sport. But obviously tennis is a near and dear place to my heart. I mean, the sport is fucking impossible. I mean, it really is. And, you know, I can't speak to hockey and how these guys are feeling. It's a really interesting, you know, you're talking about 30 to 45 second shifts in hockey, but they're gassed, you know, they're going full out. And then you have tennis where you have time in between, but you're on your own for 5 hours, you know? So it's like this weird combination, but it's also completely different. Alcaraz is a good example. I mean, you watch that guy's US Open run, you're like, he's a freak, you know? Yeah. And not that we don't have others, you know, in the sport of tennis that are similar, but this guy's out of this world. You know, obviously McDavid isn't quite as young anymore, but the way that guy moves, I showed my fiance a picture of McDavid. And I was like, you're never going to believe, you know, the best hockey player in the world right now. And this is what he looks like. Showed him a picture of McDavid with his like parents or whatever, like in the airport. Like that's
I think that was just a random.
Is that a random? That's unbelievable.
That picture's hilarious. Yeah.
And I'm like, you're never going to believe like this fucking nerd, you know, is like just out of this world, the best athlete, you know, in hockey right now. And yeah, I think this is the generation in tennis that athleticism is kind of trumping all. And I think hockey's in this interesting in-between phase where speed has obviously taken over in a lot of cases. But I think history is going to repeat itself a little bit because the rink is only so big. So are guys like Matt Martin, are guys like Trouba, are those guys going to take over again? And knowing like, hey, I can't skate around with my head down. You know, I can't make these moves I once did. What if we have two Troubas out there? What if we have, you know, the identity line in the aisles? Like, we don't want to face them. And we've seen that in playoff hockey. So with tennis, it's going in that same direction too. Is like, is speed going to take over, or are we going to get to the point where just extreme conditioning is at the top again? So it's in this kind of evolution, you know, phase right now, which, I mean, Alcaraz is a joke. So we'll see what he can do. And if he can stay healthy.
Those were some great hockey analogies. But no, I want to circle back to, obviously, you know, your time as a pro tennis player. You know, every athlete, right, whether it's hockey, tennis, baseball, football, is super competitive. And what would you say, like, specifically gave you personally the push you needed to play at your best in each match? Because, of course, you know, that competitive nature is, I feel like every professional athlete has some fierce type of competitor in them.
Yeah. And tough to pin anything specifically down. I would say that I had this addiction to run down balls. You know, I made a living out of my speed for the most part. And just to see kind of the fear on somebody's face when A, I was running down balls that no human should get to, especially at my size. And then B, that I wasn't getting tired after getting to that ball. And I think breaking the willpower of my opponent, you know, was like an addiction. And I know it's you know, for being like a pretty good guy off the court, you know, it sounds weird, but, you know, you go into this different head, and I just wanted to break the will.
No, you love to see him in pain.
In pain, you know, complete and like, and giving up, you know, fully giving up. And, you know, and it's funny. I mean, bringing it always back to owls for you guys. I never have the chance to do this. But
no,
like,
dude, do your thing. That's what I want you here.
That's why I love like Isles. You know, they're not pretty. They never really had stars. I mean, we got Horvat and obviously Barzell's, you know, he's out for a little bit, but it's always been this team of just grinding teams down. Nobody wants to play them. That's why they always struggle in the regular season. It's a long season to play that kind of hockey, but nobody wants to play them in the playoffs. You know, they grind them down, and that's how it was kind of for my tennis career.
Yeah. Yeah. When they, I remember it was, when did they make the ECF? Was that 21 or 20?
Back to back. Yeah. Back to back.
The first one was 20.
19.
Was it 19?
The bubble.
19? 19, yeah, 20, yeah. I just remember, you know, we would play them and they would beat us in like 1-0 games or 2-0 games and would just suffocate their opponents. And it's like, I just remember all season long, because don't get me wrong, I hate the fucking Isles, you're a scumbag, but, you know, they would really do such a good job at like suffocating their opponents. And when they had a 1-0 lead, like you couldn't get it back. And it was insane. That's why I remember, I think it was 19. It could have been 20. One of the years, I just remember, you know, every single time we would play the Isles, you know, whether it was, you know, Kenny Albert covering a game or whether it was Sam Rosen covering a game, they would always say, like, you got to score first because if they score, it's going to be insanely hard to, you know.
The trot shutdown.
The trot shutdown.
Yeah, that was, yeah, and yeah, I remember if they'd, like, score in the first period, I'd be like, fuck. So it's like, yeah. It's,
well, also Igor like one time against them. So yeah, like so far in his career, twice.
Well, Igor wasn't on the team in 19, so
he was. That was his first year.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was Hanks. He was Hanks back.
COVID was
Hanks.
His first year, bro.
That was that year.
Played 12. Dude, I just said 19. COVID was 2020.
19-20.
Bro. Did you say they made back to back?
Yeah,
they made back to back in 1920 and 2021.
Okay. Yeah. You didn't say 2021, Johnny. You said 1920. So Igor, I figured you meant.
Igor played like 15 games that season.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, I figured he meant 18, 19, and 1920 because he only said 19 and 20.
Well, no, well, speak and save him.
No, I will. No, it's funny that even like Isles fans piss me off almost more than Rangers fans, to be honest with you. Like, you know, obviously the Isles had a tough period, and hopefully they make the playoffs. We don't know what it's going to look like. You know, it's in kind of in their hands right now, but you know, they're like, oh, we can't score, blah, 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 all this stuff. And I'm like, no, they were winning games. How that team could win games.
Yeah.
Lane Lambert came in. They tried to do this new kind of wave of aggressive, you know, three men forward like Rangers do and easy breakouts, but that's not what Isles can do. They don't have the talent, the skating, the skill for that necessarily to keep that up. And they're not used to it. So when they went back to it, they're like, oh, I guess, you know, 2-1's okay, or 1-0. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's boring hockey and they're boring games, but that's the way they win. And for me, I saw that. I was like, yeah, don't you want to win? Like, I get, you know, some of them suck and they get outshot basically like 3x sometimes. Mm-hmm. And yes, Sorokin has to stand on his head, or Varlamov even. I mean, that guy's a joke too. But yeah, it's just I was fans thinking that, you know, we have to be skating around like some of these other teams. We're not the Avs, you know? And
yeah.
I think I went to the Oilers game this year. I mean, we shut them out 3-0. It was 1-0. Mm-hmm. Sorokin stopped, I think, 40 at the time. And then you shut them down. They have no will. You score two extra goals. It's 3-0, and that's the game.
You should have said one love.
One love.
Tennis brand. But no, I was actually going to say, like, but now, you know, everyone recognizes the way the Islanders play. And there's an actual shot that the Islanders play the Bruins in round one. And that, you know, people are saying that's like the last team the Bruins are going to want to see. Because if you face a hot Sorokin and a defensive style team, like, that's the team that can grind out Boston and beat them. So
you'd rather Pitt 100 yeah. any day.
It's mm-hmm. so funny. It's so funny you say that because no offense, I don't know if the, I don't know if the Islanders can beat. Yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah, he offends me all the time. He wouldn't say
yeah,
no.
Yeah, no, I shit on John all the time. But I don't think the Isles stand a chance against the Bruins. But mm-hmm. you never know. But I was just thinking, like as you mentioned, oh, I don't know if we'll be in the playoffs. I took a quick peek at the standings and really noticed like Florida started to creep up.
Yeah.
That's
and Florida has so much skill that they're a team. Like if they do make it, like I wouldn't be like dumbfounded if they somehow found a way to beat Boston.
No, they looked lost for a while, which totally. Is shocking. Yeah. I mean, because of the skill on the team, obviously they had a few guys injured, but no, that is a scary team. I just, for whatever reason, the chemistry is just not there, you know, yeah. it's not. And then yeah. the skill shows up and, you know, Bobrovsky and
goaltending's just,
yeah. I mean, yeah. for but a
they,
guy,
if they go hot. I mean, it seems like they're getting hot. So if they go into these last 15 games, like,
I haven't looked at the schedule. I know Islanders have, you know, on paper, a fairly easy schedule kind of to finish the year, which means absolutely nothing for the Isles because it doesn't
matter who they play. Blackhawks beat Bruins last night.
Yeah. Listen, man, I hate the Islanders and I would Venmo you money for if the Islanders beat the Bruins. Okay, instead of just betting on the Islanders to be
just give me money,
I would just give you free money because the Bruins are just the one team I don't want to play. I need somebody to take them out.
I don't know. I don't see them making that run, and there's no reason why they shouldn't make the run. And mm-hmm. that's the I just
you know why I don't you know why
I've seen their grit why. Now, and there's just loosening up a bit. I just don't know if that extra grit is there.
I agree with you, and I'll tell you why. And I've been kind of on this bandwagon the whole season. Johnny knows. I think the Bruins are an incredibly deep team, but I think they have one true superstar in Pasta. I mean, like Charlie McAvoy's amazing,
right?
You know, Marchand's really, really good. Bergeron, even though he's kind of at the tail end of his career, like he's really, really good. They have all these other guys like DeBrusk and a bunch of other guys who are scoring goals, doing things, and they're
you named
very,
a lot of
very
players
deep.
Right there.
No, they're very, very deep. Just don't one. Get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. They're very,
and
very
Omar's going to win the Vezina, probably.
Shut the fuck up. Well, don't
Omar's
even.
Obviously playing out of his mind. Yes, he's going to win the Vezina, but I don't know, you man. I think they – I do think so. And I also think
– Noah's like shaking his head like it's going to be
Sorokin. It just fucking kills me. No, it just absolutely kills me. I mean, the guy's a slightly above average goaltender.
Yeah, he's just having an insane year. I agree with that.
And he's playing well on an insane team. Those stats are – I mean – Sorokin has a 12 to 15. I forgot what it was. 50%. He's going to have a shutout anytime he steps on ice.
Yeah.
To me, it's just like they have, you know, they have Pasta. If you want to call Marchand and if
so
you
what's
want to
break
call
down?
McAvoy a star,
so what's breaking
fine.
Down?
Okay.
But no, I'm asking you, what's breaking down the Bruins to besides Isles just absolutely
I just
shutting
don't
them down?
Think, I just don't think they like when they're going to play a team, like for example, the Rangers that has, I don't know, six superstars, five superstars. Like when it comes to playoffs, I don't know. And I mean, if you're asking me like Omark against Igor in playoffs, yeah, Omark's had the better season. Zero questions asked.
I'm worried about Igor. I am. I mean, this is honest. I mean, I love the idea of Ilya and Igor coming in. So the hate between is not real hate. But
well, they're like best friends.
Yeah. They love it. I'm sure they laugh about it constantly. Yeah. I mean, they're like, well, who are the fucking Americans?
Yeah.
Like, we don't care. And
well,
Igor's also
rattled off. Like, his last five games have actually been pretty good.
100%. So. And you can definitely go into the playoffs, you know, thinking that he has your back. But he's definitely looked a little on edge, rebound-wise and stuff like that. But, I mean, I sat up close for a lot of the Bruins games in that was 20. Yeah.
Oh, that series?
Yeah, series.
And that was a great series.
It was a great series, but like you saw the
will.
That
was seven,
gone.
Right? That
was
seven.
Six. Yeah. So I was at games. I was on ice at game six. And you're like, you just watched it where you knew there was no chance. Like there was just a little grit getting lost. Like, you know, the identity line was just absolutely breaking down. Marchand was flustering him. So his antics were out of the way. I will say McAvoy was not at that level. You know, he's definitely leaps and bounds where he is now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think they have that extra grit to go seven.
I mean, they got
games
Bertuzzi
in those
now.
Series.
He's an agitator.
That is true. That is. I forgot about Bertuzzi. That's. I mean. Talk about the trade deadlines for these teams. I mean.
Yeah.
What a run, but yeah, we'll see.
We'll say. Well, let's go into a little more Ranger Islander focus. Yes. Like, I want to hear your favorite moment at the Coliseum if you've been to you know, a good Ranger Islander game there, because there's been a lot. You know, I think about like the DiPietro Montoya fight, the Chris Simon game. You know, there's so much shit that's gone on in the Coliseum. Not as much lately in UBS, but
yeah. Well, honestly, most of my, I will say, like, the craziest Coliseum ones are more for the Penguins. Like, I went to those games.
Oh,
the
Pietro
fight that he fought the game after, that was at Pens, but the benches cleared. It was basically 7-3. Like, I was at that game. I was at that game. I would say my best Ranger Islander games have been MSG for the most part. I mean, this is early days. I remember 7-8 years old, like, my dad's literally grabbing me by the coattails because there's fights. We're in like the 300s. And there's fist fights, and my dad, and I'm just like, what's happening? And like, and there's fights down there, there's fights up there. I would say probably recent memory was where Ilya should have got save of the year. I was at that game at MSG.
The stick save?
Stick save.
I was there too. That was crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. You know, sadly, and this is absolutely shitting you guys, and I'm glad to do it. They haven't been exciting games.
Yeah.
The past few years, Islanders have absolutely dismantled. You know, you've had a couple good periods where you know Sorokin's standing ahead. Varlamov has had an absolutely insane record against you guys at MSG.
Bovillier, he was the killer,
absolute killer. I have great Islanders memories at college. I mean, I went to the last game, so I couldn't get any friends to go to the last game. This was game six.
I was there too. That was sick. I go to, I just love hockey.
Johnny's such a, you don't understand. This kid gets roasted 15 times a week because he tweets about how much he loves the Rangers. And then literally like the next day, he'll be tweeting shit with like a devil shirt on.
I was at
like,
two Devils games
like,
last week.
hanging out at the shitty Prudential Center where their chants like you suck.
Yeah. So you just go to like a rent, like Islander.
I love hockey, man. I'll go to any.
He's a fan of beer. What can he say? He's
a
fan
of beer. I mean, I kind of respect it. Yeah. I don't know if I'd go, like, I'll watch games for sure on TV. Would I go out? I mean, so every time I travel, I'll eventually hit up every arena. That's kind of like a goal of mine.
Yeah.
I've gone to a decent amount. Like, I actually, where I shot my first episode of my documentary is in Calgary. Got to go to that stadium, and that was my first. That was actually my first Canadian hockey game. I've never been. I just never had time for it. So that was cool. I mean, I actually thought they were going to be much rowdier. They're like the nicest people of all time, and like saying "excuse me," and I was like, "What the fuck is happening right now?" my fiance went to vet school in Minnesota, so got to a lot of games out there. It was a lot of fun. Vegas was early on in Vegas. Was probably one of the best hockey experiences I've ever been to. 3-on-3 versus the Canucks was like one of my first times seeing 3-on-3 live. I was like, okay, this is like a Broadway performance. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I think game six, final game, NASA Coliseum, I couldn't get any of my friends to go. I sat behind the net, not where they scored. And I got tackled by an 80-year-old guy. And I actually just found the picture. I'm in the Dime Club at,
you gotta send me that.
Yeah, I'll send you the picture. I have two. So I was game six, Bruins. It was in New York Times because I was on the ice right next to Nelson celebrating, and then and then those two. So those are probably my two best. But yeah, I mean, the Rangers got to fucking step up because these games have been boring. Games have been boring recently. You know
what I was doing at game six of the Tampa series, like that Bovillier game. My seats were like up top, like 200, 300, whatever.
Yeah.
And the Coliseum had like that like hallway, you know, in the like actual arena.
Yeah.
So I was walking to every single section and like standing there, just like switching once the security guard caught on, because I couldn't really see overtime, you know, or
the third period.
So like when Mayfield scored the goal to tie the game, I was like right in the corner of the goal, like where the puck went in. It was sick.
It was a joke. I mean, everything was aligning. I sadly missed the one game, but Pulak saved with 2 seconds left with his hand diving across the crease. Like, you know, he can't even make the shit up at this point. But yeah, hockey's been that spot. I mean, it's funny. I talk about other sports. I just went to the Knicks game the other night. Like, it's so boring. It's like
boring.
It's so boring. Oh, dude, I tried.
Dude, like, you're preaching to the choir. I can't do
like basketball. I tried. I went to actually, my friend is in Oklahoma. I went to a Thunder game, was on the floor. And at that point, you see the athleticism. It's a little bit different. But, like, just watching basketball is really tough. And Minnesota got into the Vikings there. Like, it's fun. You know, it's fun because it's once a week, so it's easy to get into football. But, yeah, Skol. I mean, it was indoors.
Aaron Rodgers,
it was literally – no, we don't talk about that.
Are you a Packers fan?
No, I'm a Vikes fan. I'm a Vikes fan. No, it's nice to get him out.
Oh, dude, he's about to fucking leave your division. What do you mean?
I know. We weren't scared of him, though. You know, but it was 5 minutes walking.
True. They
fine.
Were scared of Kirk, though, I'm sure.
Is anybody scared of Kirk?
Yeah. Kirk.
Fucking Kirk. Prime time.
Well, I agree with you on basketball completely. Yeah. And the thing, like, this might be the weirdest thing to say, but the reason I don't enjoy basketball is I feel like you need bad players in sports. It's just part of the sport. And I feel like every fucking player on a basketball team is scoring like 10 points a game and plus. Like there's no in between. I feel like I feel like every starting player on a basketball team is just fucking putting up crazy numbers. Like your number five or your sixth man could just have a game for 40 points. Like we're not having fucking Matt Martin out here scoring six goals in a game on a Thursday. Okay.
Guys,
or like Barclay Goodrow's not scoring a hat trick tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like,
every sport needs bad players. That's the worst take I've ever heard.
My issue with basketball is that hockey
got you, bro. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Okay. I'll veer this into something that may actually make sense. is like the score doesn't matter in basketball. I think that's my problem with the sport. Like I always made the joke that like, yeah, until the last 2 minutes, the game doesn't matter. And that's literally like, it nearly doesn't matter. So I'm watching these games. Everybody scores, and you're clapping after just a layup.
There's no upsets in basketball.
It's come soft. The game's soft. Yeah, I mean the upsets are a problem.
One versus
as well.
Eight. Like when does the one lose?
It's a joke. Which
Johnny's
I know
cringing because he loves basketball so much. But you know what? Fuck basketball.
Do you really? Do you really?
I love basketball.
And you like the stoppages. You don't find an issue with like I don't know. I just there's something about it that I really struggle. Slow and soft is what I would call it. Guys are insane athletes. They're insane. And you're telling me 6'8", 250, and he gets tapped in the elbow and and LeBron's out for the next 4 weeks.
So off topic.
Don't get me started. Okay. If you want to talk about a win.
Let's bring it back.
Yeah, let's bring it back a bit. Let's talk more about you and your career.
Yeah.
Obviously you talked about how you have falling in love with hockey, but what would you tell hockey fans? There's 1,000 hockey fans listening right now, about why to fall in love with tennis and pickleball.
1,200
in your sport.
I think once you weed out the stuff, it's very easy to fall in love with it. I mean, there's no other sport in the world like it. Obviously, people get around and supporting it during the US Open. It's super easy. But there's something, the athleticism, and once you actually see some highlights, you see these guys at a level that tough to compare to a lot of these other sports, and the individual aspect compared to it it's a lot of fun. Obviously there's a lot of things I want to change about tennis. I want it to be a little bit more rowdy. I want people to get more involved in it and, cheering, clapping and everything. And I think that's just going to add a new level. But, right now with how it is, you have some insane talents, some insane athleticism that's coming into our sport that I think you have to get behind. And, Breakpoint, I don't know if you guys watched it.
Yeah.
It helped a little bit. I think it struggled in some areas as well. But taking a look at some of these guys and seeing what they can do on the court. I mean, these are guys I grew up with and, maybe see them again soon. But, there's a lot to love about the sport. There is.
So I agree with that. Tennis is fascinating. I was a superstar athlete for 1 year playing tennis, but I did go to the US Open once. I saw Djokovic and it was fucking awesome. That was like 7 years ago now, but it was just such a cool experience. And I really only have like one more question here for you on my end. And it's like, is there growing up and playing the sport consistently, obviously to a level where you got professional, was there one player that you tried to model your game after, or is there like any player that you just absolutely idolized growing up? And did you get to meet that player? So I guess it's a bunch of questions in one.
No, but I mean, I luckily got to meet most of my idols for one part or another. Got to play with a lot of them as well. I don't know how deep into the tennis world you guys are. I think a lot of them I modeled after. I think a lot of the ones that I modeled my game after, because I'm not tall. I had to do it after these grinding fighting ones. One was Lane Hewitt out of Australia. He was number one in the world for a period of time. Then you have David Nalbandian. You probably have no idea who that is.
Nope.
And David Ferrer is a really good one. That's kind of when I was growing up. So he was four in the world, mm-hmm. while Federer, Nadal, Djokovic were one, two, and three. And this guy would never lose to anybody below him. He struggled with the top three. But there was a level of consistency from a guy that was 5'9".
You purposely couldn't go one of the three? You had to go number four?
Yeah, I had to go number four because that's what I felt. I mean, not that you don't grow up being, you know, thinking to be one in the world, but that's where I saw my potential going, was to that kind of level of play. And I was at the French Open one year. I was in juniors. He was playing men's. I saw him do treadmill sprints, espresso, and then smoke a cigarette and then go on a court and play 5 hours at the French Open and win his match. And I was like, I was like, this guy is just, they don't build guys like this. You know, that's just kind of, I don't know. It's out of this world. So I looked at that. I was like, if I could be, you know, an eighth of that, you know, I guess I'll be pretty good. So still have, if I ever come back to the sport of tennis, I'll have a little way to go to get that. But that, you know, there's a few guys like that that have maximized their potential because everybody else is 6'2", you know, at this point.
You haven't even talked about winning Junior Wimbledon, which is like a huge deal, right? Like, that's pretty fucking sick. And
that's dope.
You know, I don't know if you want to talk about the mental health stuff also, because I know we've kind of got deep into that before, you and I.
Yeah.
You know, just about, well, listen, I think tennis is unlike any other sport when it comes to the, you know, individuality, but there's a lot of, you know, mental health stuff in hockey that hockey players aren't really as outspoken about that you are, you know, for your sport. I don't know if you just want to talk about it.
I mean, it was good to see, like, Leonard was one of the first ones, and obviously him having, you know, Long Island as a near and dear connection. You know, I actually got connected with a organization that he works with, and, you know, just seeing him kind of be one of the first ones and people kind of accepting it, you know, it took a little bit, but accepting it, I think, is, you know, a major win. In tennis, there's a lot of other reasons, you know, I mean, sports as in general, I mean, everybody can deal with it, but tennis is, you know, individual, it's, you know, financially top heavy. So even at 100 in the world, you're struggling, you're paying for coaches, you're paying for everything on your own. So you're basically dealing with this loneliness, depression, while not making as much money as you think you should be making. And it's kind of spirals. So that led to me kind of creating this Behind the Racket platform, just so people were educated of what's actually going on in the world of professional tennis players. And it led to it kind of expanding into this world that I never really thought. But to see it in other sports, obviously Players Tribune does a little bit, but to see hockey, you know, taking the front seat on it a little bit more than some of these other sports as well.
I think of like Kevin Love in the NBA.
Speaking of the NBA,
I just realized I wanted to walk back my basketball sucks talk because I fucking love March Madness, but that's the extent of my basketball prowess.
That's it. Okay, we walked that.
Very relatable to the topic of conversation.
Yeah. Well, you literally just said Kevin Love in the NBA, so I had to jump in.
Okay, okay. He likes basketball. we'll tell everybody. Nobody hates you. Don't worry.
All right, phew.
But yeah, no, that's kind of what it was all built for. I mean, Behind the Racket kind of, again, expanded something I never thought it would. And now people kind of know me as that, and it's given me a platform that's exciting and growing with it. And and tried to take it into other sports, hopefully in the end. And I've got another, you know, that's what I said, Barkov on, and Brian McKinney of the Vikings, and, you know, a few random ones. But mental health is, you know, it's when you withdrew from a tennis tournament and you had an injury, you know, it was always like, oh, is it ankles? You can never just say you're exhausted, and you can't literally. And especially in tennis, you're the only one. So if you're really not in a place where you can get out of bed, and it's your 80th match that year, you know, there was really nothing to say, you know, you're depressed. And now that's kind of coming to a place where it is. And obviously the conversation of are people abusing it, what that looks like, you know, that's a conversation for another day. And I think we just have to be happy that it's being had now.
No, I completely agree. It's important. It's just so different in today's day. You know, like I remember, I don't need to talk about myself, but, you know, there's coaches who always just said, like, you know, block the pain, play through it, and,
of course,
you know, stuff like that. But I guess just to finish up here before we let you go.
I have a question for you guys after, so don't put me out too quick.
Hit us.
But also, I also wanted to say, like, it's so important in the aspect of I feel like, you know, you did say the world is kind of evolving a little bit, and you can see that, right? Like, you know, it should be talked about in more sports for sure. Like, especially like hockey and, you know, every sport, right? Yeah.
Not basketball.
Yeah, fuck basketball. No, but you know what? Forget it. But no, but seriously, I think it's like super important. And I think like you know, all these teams now have therapists and, you know, in-house people. And I think like you can see different sports trying to make strides in mental health. And I think that's so important because at the end of the day, right? Like, you know, this firsthand, athletes are humans too. And it's like those kinds of things can get to athletes just like they can get to actors and, you know, everyday working folks. And,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. I mean, everybody deals with it, and that's 100%. Yeah. I think, you know, for people at a certain level, everything's heightened a little bit more. And I think that's where athletes, you know, you said actors, it's kind of in the same boat, is that binging is the word I would use, that, I mean, work hard, play hard. I mean, for a lot of people that I know in the tennis world are abusing alcohol, but they don't really know it is abusing alcohol, but they're exhausted. They just did 2 months on the road and, you know, now it's a 2 day, you know, binge fest. And it's like, oh, you're not a human. Like, that's not a normal thing to do. And they're not a human for the next week. And it, like, there's a lot of things you can go into, and that all comes from mental health and being healthy. So I'm glad. Yeah. Teams are doing it. Obviously, as tennis players, we're independent contractors. So if we weren't going to pay for it, which, you know, a lot of us couldn't afford it, it didn't come from anywhere. But now these organizations are putting things in place. So it definitely, it has expanded to, you know, some kind of comfort level. And that all happened because of the pandemic. And hopefully I had a little impact on that.
Love it.
You've done an awesome job. What's your question for us?
I'm bringing it back to hockey. We can't end on this stuff. So we have to, we have to finish.
I have one more after this.
Okay, good. So, I mean, I got, you know, 15 minutes. We're okay. We're okay. I want to know your honest opinion on the trade deadline for you guys. Kane, everything else that went through. What is, obviously we're all excited. I was even excited to watch it. What right now, what's the feel?
Well, it's funny you say that, actually. I mean, Cody, do you mind if I go first?
It seems like you're going first.
Yeah, well, no matter what you said, I was injured anyway. I'm trying to be respectful. But, I think today, too, you know, seeing all the Aaron Rodgers and Jets stuff, and, you know, Islander fans typically are Jets fans also, just kind of how it works in New York, like the Jets, Islanders, Mets, kind of the grouping, Yankees, Rangers, Knicks, or whatever sport I'm missing, Giants. But, you know, I think any team would have taken the opportunity to get Patrick Kane at what they got him for. You know, I think Tarasenko has been a great addition, and Kane has been pretty good too. He's got 3 goals and I think 2 assists in 6 games so far. Like, he hasn't done nothing. Has he looked incredible defensively? No, but he's not a fucking defensive player. And I hate people that keep saying like, oh, he's a liability in the D zone. Like, no shit, but he's going to score goals. Like, that's how that's how all these guys are. Like, you know, if you're an offensive player, that's what you focus on, is scoring goals and making plays.
Was there like a disappointment of like, how did we not somewhat correct the D at all going into the playoffs, or no?
Well, I'm gonna jump in here. Johnny's not next to his nose guy like me. So this is what we're gonna talk about. So first of all, that's disrespectful to Tyler Mott and Mikola Johnny. Thank you.
Well, he said Kane. Like,
I know. I'm just kidding. No, but all
is
jokes
Mott
aside,
like, dead or something, or is he still playing?
all jokes aside, Johnny knows, like, Tarasenko has been my guy for like 2 years. Two, 3 years. I've wanted him on the Rangers. I thought he'd be a great fit. You know, I never thought they'd kind of have the chance to get him outside of maybe this year. Did anybody think they can get Tarasenko and Kane? I mean, if you asked if you asked 100 people, I think 100 people would have said no chance.
I really thought the Owls, I really thought the Owls were going to get Tarasenko. I really did. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, Chris Drury clearly saw a need. He struck early, which is great. And then was able to get it done for Kane too. And you know, in people forget, like, they also got Mikola with Tarasenko, who's been pretty good. Like, he's been pretty good, like, stay at home defenseman. He's not going to be a points guy. Shut up, Johnny. But and then they got Tyler Mott back, who is beloved by this fan base.
Yeah.
Absolute grinder on our fourth line, and he's been playing great. So I think, you know, if you want to talk about like the one issue right now, it's obviously defense, but they're banged up, right? Keandre Miller, the whole spit incident, he was suspended 3 games. Lindgren's been on and off hurt for the past 15 games.
Yeah.
Okay. He's been tonight. He's or I guess tomorrow, but you know, this game would have already happened by the time this episode airs, but you know, he was going to miss his like 8th or 9th straight game. So it's like, they're banged up. And you know, they did sign Harper to a two-year deal, but they don't want to play him, and you know, like, they didn't want to have to play him, and you know, now it's like gotten to the point where they kind of have to because Lindgren's been out and stuff like that. So I think what you've been seeing, I guess my long answer for you is like, what you've been seeing on the D these past, like, I don't know, week or two isn't consistent with what you'll see, because Ryan Lindgren is without a doubt the catalyst for this team. Like, this defense runs through him, and he's not a flashy guy. Like, he doesn't, you know, he won't show up on the stat sheet constantly, but this D straight up runs through him, and they are an entirely different defensive team and defensively sound, like, when he's in that lineup. So that's what I expect.
I would argue defensively sound for sure. I don't think
that's fair.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Kane scares anybody, if that makes sense. I don't know. It's a cool addition. He's going to score some goals, and you don't know what playoff Kane looks like. You know, that's, that's why you guys got him. Tarasenko, again, you know, I think he's overall probably a disappointment. You know, I don't know what you guys
would think.
Say.
So 10 points in 16 games. I don't know. I mean, that's kind of like on pace. Like,
I think anybody in his position would get those points. Yeah. More or less.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree.
So I don't think he would go offense at all. I think the Rangers offense is scary or without them. You know, I think they were scary. You know, you don't want the power play there. You have to think that, you know, your D won't be whole by the playoffs, you know, and to give that up. And if you're having a couple bad games, you know, that could be the series. I was just, you know, curious. They didn't go after, like, I don't know. I mean, who are some of the top D?
Like Klingberg, but yeah. they're not going to put. The problem is Church, their top four set. So they weren't going to like make a crazy move to put a guy in the third pair. It just wasn't going to happen. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's tough.
All right. Well, let us wrap up with this because, well, you're an active Twitter Islander fan.
Yeah, so, I've had a little bit of time off, so I got it. It's been fun. It has.
Yeah,
been.
it's a lot of fun. I've had 8 hours of Twitter battles.
Oh, a few random ones on Isles and Rangers and random ones as well. Mm-hmm. Especially, yeah, the new one has been comparing Bovilia to Bo Horvat, which has been fun for me. But yeah.
Well, just to stir the pot a bit as we get ready for playoffs, because there's going to be a lot of chirping with Rangers, Islanders, Devils fans. What do you hate about Ranger fans the most? I can't wait for people to tweet at you after this.
Oh, he already said he doesn't hate us.
I think they're like total disregard for, like, I mean, it's so tough because I really do think across all fan bases,
we think we're always going to win. You could just say it.
No. It has nothing. Yeah. I mean, I do think you guys are basically grass always greener. Like, the problems that you have now won't be the problems in the future, but nothing's changed. And that goes to the conversation we just had. But I see it constantly. Like, a lot of things don't change and you still deal with the same problems. You're like, well, yeah, you didn't change anything. Like, the problems are still going to be there. Like, Kane. Like, people talk about Kane's defense. You didn't get him to go back on defense. You better not be getting your 34-year-old, you know, whatever, passer to go back on D and back check. But, you know, that's been my biggest issue. I will say cherry picking stats is a big Rangers fan thing to do. And they pick out one thing there and one thing there. And I'm like, well, did you even look at the whole picture of, like, actually what's going on? But again, I mean, this is, I will say, getting deeper into, like, I mean, tennis Twitter is fucking crazy because it's individual. You have, like, fanatics.
Nick Kyrgios.
No, but you have, like, fanatics to the individual besides the tennis players themselves. Mm. Where,
well, that's what I meant, the people that go after Kyrgios.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But you have, like, these Djokovic fans that always attacked me when I was fighting Djokovic. Like, you have things like that. But now being in, like, hockey Twitter, it's, like, a totally different world. And with so many stats, I always just laughed at, like, it's there on paper. Like, a lot of the things I'm arguing are, like, on paper. I'm like, how are you? Like, tennis doesn't always have those, where hockey's like this. There's definitely things that people have an effect on a team, and you have to watch the games for that. But for the most part, you're seeing what's happening, you know? And
you're a chart guy.
What?
You're a chart guy.
I am. I think, you know, I think for certain players that are picked to have a certain role, you can't say that they're not putting things on the board. You know, there comes a time. And that's why I argue, like, Horvat has saved our season. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he's had probably 6 missed goal opportunities in the past few games that we could have used him. So is he as pure of a goal scorer as we think he is? No. Does he fit in Isles, you know, really well? 100%. But do we need, like, one extra goal scorer now because we thought Bo might have been that, you know, where he's, you know, a 40-goal scorer this year, but maybe he is, you know, a 25 to 30 goal scorer next year. You know, it's like looking at that where it's like, he has saved our season when Barzal died, basically. Mm. But at the same time, we need him to score 3 extra goals. But then you go back and you're like, who are his line mates? So it goes, has a little ebb and flow, but you need to produce. I need to see some of that, you know, on the chart. So it's funny when, you know, these guys argue, like, and I'm like, I has literally 3 points in like 15 games. Like, you can't tell me that this guy's turning around your team, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's valid. Yeah. It's valid. It's valid.
But I love that answer. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The last one I just need on, but like when the Beauvillier Beauhorvat one has just been my favorite so far. Mm-hmm. And they're arguing, they're like, you gave up Ratu and you gave up first rounder, and Bo has more points than, Beauvillier has more points than Beauhorvat. And I'm like, yeah, like, what are we comparing here? Like, a lot of these guys on Twitter, I mean, this is in tennis too, show how much they don't know about sports as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, constantly. Yeah. And you can't, you know, unless you give them like a 5-paragraph essay, they just never know. So, like, Beauvillier, he's playing with, you know, Pettersson, who's great, and he's playing pointless games. So they're all offense. They're having fun. They're scoring goals. And he's on a team that scores goals and likes scoring goals. So, like, comparing that to Horvath's job right now is trying to lead this team, Isles defense. Like, it's just like, what are we doing? You know, and they just make up these arguments. So it's been funny. I've seen it on the Ranger side too, and I just kind of leave it with the Kane stuff. And I have my own shit to deal with, like, with the Isles. But yeah, Kane gets so much shit where it's like, that's not his job. Like, that's not why he got brought in. But very funny.
Turned into like a respectful answer. I wasn't expecting that. You're going to bash Ranger fans for 2 minutes.
No. I mean, I can't. They're
dancing around the question.
The one thing I'll end with is it's changed a little bit with the excitement of this team, but you just stop comparing our two fan bases and stop comparing going to a home game. There was nothing like going to Nassau Coliseum. MSG is very cool. But the fan base, when I was going there, where everybody was in a student tie. You know, and as much as that is, it just wasn't the same feel, wasn't as fun. Like, losing Nassau Coliseum was like a home. That was like a true home. And that like really got me, because that was like my childhood, where like Rangers fans, you had to go to 300s to get really any true emotion out of some of these guys. So fuck them. They're taking up those seats. I mean, they took up the 100s.
Fans are mid. Facts.
But no, seriously, we want to thank you so much. And if the Rangers and Islanders do play each other in the playoffs, which could actually happen, we're going to have to figure something out.
There's not one game I wouldn't go to.
Did already, but do you want to plug your pod?
Behind the Racket pod. Yeah. I mean, honestly, you go to Behind the Racket on Instagram. That's where you can find everything. My website's there. It has my podcast. And that's way more important than my own personal page. So definitely follow that one out.
Thank you. We appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me.
We want to thank our pal Noah Rubin for coming on the show. Such a fun conversation, a lot of good banter back and forth, a lot of shit talking, but you know, it'd be fun to see the Islanders make the playoffs and maybe have him go back and forth again, whatever, you know, if that is the scenario. But Cody, we got some big games this week. We got a home and home against the Carolina Hurricanes, and then a game on Saturday in Florida at 5:00 against the Panthers, the Red Hot Panthers, like we talked about.
Yep.
What are your predictions for those three games this week? Because this is going to be a battle.
Yeah, I think all three games are going to be a battle. It's going to be a tough week. I think we're going to split against the Hurricanes. So I'm going to say 3-2 Hurricanes when they're home, and then when we're home, I'm going to say 3-2 us in OT. So I guess Tuesday I'll go 3-2 OT winner for us. Mm-hmm. Thursday, 3-2 winner for them. And then against the Panthers, honestly, we play them really well every time we play them, and it's always an absolute shootout. I'm going to go 6-4 Rangers.
And you think Igor starts all three?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, at this point, you know, you kind of got to let him grind it out a bit. Plus, the following week, there's a back-to-back. Halaka will get one of those games and, you know, kind of stay fresh there. I think you got to let Igor kind of ride it out and you know, really get hot here.
Yeah, I agree. And we're basically a month, a little less than a month go here. Last game of the season is April 13th, so it's winding down. You know, I kind of agree with your take on the games this week. I think the Rangers win at home. I think they lose in Carolina, and then I think they squeeze one out in Florida. Super pumped for the end of the season here. I'm almost just ready for it, knowing that the Rangers basically clinched. Like, you know, I kind of just want it to happen already. This is the tough time where the light's at the end of the tunnel, and you just got to get through these games, but it's going to be a lot of fun, man. It's an exciting time of year, that's for sure.
Yes, sir. That all said, let's go into this week's draft. We're going to go through our three favorite beers each. Johnny, I'll give you the first pick.
I think mine's just a Stella. Really? You know, classic. Anytime I'm in an airport or whatever, anything, anytime it's on tap, I'm always going with Stella. That's my number one.
I think mine's a Hoegaarden.
Oh, I love Hoegaarden.
I'm a huge fan of Hoegaarden.
I actually drink Hoegaard whenever I go to the Canuck and watch and watch hockey. That's that's my go to there.
Yep. So I'm gonna go with Hoegaarden.
That's interesting. I'm trying to think of like the vibe too, right? Like you know, what kind of vibe am I going for? I mean, I actually I don't know how this is gonna come across. You're probably gonna make fun of me, but I like a Bud Light Lime every now and then.
Okay. with my next one, I'm gonna go, which is a classic. Funny enough, they have a sneaky like little, when you're at the Garden for Rangers game and you make a right, there's one little vendor that sells Kona Golden Ales, and I love Kona. So I'm gonna go with Kona Big Wave as number
the
two.
The Big Wave,
yeah,
Big Waves are going. Those are heavy though.
No, dude, they're blonde. No, they're light, man.
They are.
You're probably getting the wrong flavor.
Maybe
the Golden Ale one's like smooth. It's very very similar to like Blue Moon and like Allagash and
well,
like
Blue Moon is my that was my next one. A Blue Moon with an orange slice is
that's a classic. That's
always
classic.
A vibe. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, my third on paper would probably be Allagash. Blue Moon. It's the same thing, like Blue Moon, Hoegaarden, all the Belgian beers. I love those Belgian beers. But I'm gonna go like my favorite to get at sporting events. So you know, Ranger games, Yankee games, Jets games, and that's for sure Blue Point Toasted. Love Blue Point Toasted.
I'm not really like such a variety beer person. I kind of just like
Bud Light Lime.
I just stick to what I know.
yeah. You want to say Natty Ice for your bonus pick or no?
No, never. Okay. I was gonna say a bonus like is my like loaded Corona. You know, I love pouring a tequila shot in the neck of the Corona and slugging it. That's a good bar move. But
all right.
I think this is definitely not our best one. I'm so hungover. Like
if you can't tell, like Johnny's very low, bro.
I'm trying to get the vibe up, but I physically just cannot do it. it's a load management day for me.
It's all good. That was me yesterday.
Yeah, but we have a great episode coming for you next week. It's been a lot of fun, and you know, it's exciting stuff. And we love you guys, and we thank you for listening. And I guess Cody, just send it off.
LFGR, baby.